You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Show secretly fashion police, Dan. That's what I'm learning today. In case you're wondering what's going on in this back room, I'm letting you know, fashion policing.
Well, what is happening? Help me understand what it is that you're being fashion policed about, because you had a fashion question.
Well, we have cold here and we're debating whether you're allowed to wear a sweater 2 days in a row, like the stuff like that, because we're not used to this around here. We have, you know, it's a hot place. So when it comes to cold weather, we're not that prepared with a lot of jackets, a lot of sweaters. And I was self-conscious about wearing the same sweater 2 days in a row, and they made me feel at ease, actually.
Well, okay, so this is the backstory of what happened. Yesterday I turned and I noticed, oh, Chris's hoodie is missing the string. And I was going to ask him, like, what do you do when your hoodie loses the string? What do you do with the hoodie? Yeah. And then he was saying, unsolicited, that he was feeling very self-conscious about wearing the same hoodie 2 days in a row because he thought someone would say something. And I'm like, nah, it's not a big deal. Like, I have a hoodie normally just sitting in my seat. I'll grab it. I'll wear the same hoodie every day for, like, weeks. And then they were telling me, like, oh, that hoodie that you're wearing, a DraftKings hoodie that was sent, is good because it's cold now. It's really thick. And then we were just talking about hoodies. And then after he said I was nervous about wearing it and people would notice the hoodie, someone then pointed out to him, well, I noticed you're wearing the same shoes 2 days in a row. And then the floodgates opened and then everyone was just saying every fashion thing that they've picked up about everybody.
Okay, let's hear this then, because this,
shoes is not, I can't wear my same shoes 2 days in a row? Yeah. Is that a thing? Oh, okay, I thought it was.
I did not know that, Chris. I've been wearing like the same six pairs of sneakers for about 3 years. I did not realize I was supposed to change this every day.
If I didn't smell, I'd wear the same clothes every day, I think. In fact, I'll be honest with you. Sometimes when we're doing the shows on Zoom, I'm wearing the same shirt as the day before. I just put a hoodie or jacket on top of it. I'll go 2-3 days.
Let's not talk about the Zoom life. Like when we were doing work from home for a year,
Dirty Zoom life.
I was like, do I need a shower?
But that's dad stuff. No, see, Billy's becoming more and more of a dad. I don't think we've covered enough of this ground.
It's the role I was born for, Dan. Not the raising of the child portion. All the other
the aging.
Like a Disney trip with your kid. Oh, you're going to crush that.
Well, Billy had a wild weekend. I don't know if you guys heard about it. That's we didn't get to it. We need to get to all the Billy dad material because he's a new dad and he's been waiting for this all his life. Billy's really been a dad in spirit for how long, Billy? Since you were 12?
I would say, I was a late bloomer in terms of puberty and growth, but in terms of becoming a dad, I feel like I was probably an early bloomer on that.
I feel like you've had dad sensibilities, dad spirit, dad fossilized sort
dad
of.
Dad energy. Thank you.
Since you were, I'm guessing, 11.
I'll take it. You know what? That's nice. I didn't even realize that I had it until I think it was Tony and Jessica pointed it out to me. And this was a couple months ago where they're like, what'd you do this weekend? I was like, big weekend. Put up a new mailbox. Yeah. We're at Home Depot for a little bit. 2 day project. Put up a mailbox. You guys would love it.
A weekend spent in and out of Lowe's.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, a level.
You can never make one trip. One trip never does it.
You had to use concrete.
Course, and I had to mix it myself. Yeah, duh. Wow.
Kind of so it's not attached to your house. It's out near the street then.
Oh, no. You had to, well, it was a whole, I don't want to bore everyone with the details, but you had to go in. You have to obviously take out the old mailbox. You get the shovel. You have to take out the concrete from the old mailbox, and you get a hole digger. I didn't have one of
those. You're going to bore us anyway, huh?
No, I'm just telling you. It's an involved process. And then I didn't want to leave the job half done, so I had to replant some sod around it. It was a whole thing.
One time playing touch football in the yard with some neighborhood friends, I took out a neighbor's mailbox. I was running a route, caught the ball,
The runaway?
No, it was literally right across the street from my parents' house. So it was tough to run away from
that. You didn't know how it happened?
No, the guy was like even in his garage. And the guy was actually impressed because I barreled through. Like, your mailbox, I'm assuming you put it up well. Like, could you?
Step
on the mailbox.
If I was playing defensive lineman, could I take out your mailbox? Because I took out this mailbox very easily.
I want to dare people to take out my mailbox, but I don't because it is kind of a pain in the ass to do. So, like, please do not.
Well, Guillermo, put it on the poll at Levitard Show. No. Is replacing a mailbox an involved process?
When you do it right. I mean, you want to not do it right, then you could do it, you know.
Mine's been loose for years. Billy's right about this. You really have to take your time and get it right. You have to.
But there's do people and there's pay people. I'm a pay people guy. Mm. Like, I'm never going to put up a mailbox in my entire life. Maybe this is a privilege thing, but I don't really. Like, this is just.
I don't know how. Yeah,
not, there's no
it's,
maybe.
It's just, I don't know how to do that.
But isn't the joy in finding out?
There you go. I'm going to YouTube out of mixed concrete.
Yes. Like, it's the journey. It's exactly what you
I'd rather
do.
Right. Spend a quick $250, boom, done.
$250?
Yeah. Well, I feel like that would be. Nice little price to pay someone to do a mailbox? No.
How much would you charge to do Chris's mailbox?
That's a good question.
If
I mean,
well, he set the market at $250.
They started at $250. I'm coming in at like $500.
Okay, so yeah.
$300 deal.
But what would you have paid for? What would you have paid to not have done that, Billy?
A terrible deal.
You wanted to do it, right? So you wouldn't have paid anybody for that.
Oh yeah, come on. The satisfaction of getting the job done. Same thing with shelves.
I can only imagine things Stu got paid to have done at his house.
Yeah.
What's the most absurd thing you've paid for?
Everything.
Wait a minute. Shelves this weekend. So this was a wild weekend. This last weekend was also wild.
Oh, and getting the string lights that I put up outside.
Oh, string lights.
God. Just your January
DIY
string lights.
Weekend.
And as long as you're fashion policing, I feel like that Colts hat that you're wearing right now is carrying some of the work that you did over this weekend.
This one, I didn't.
It's weathered. It's weathered.
Okay.
I got some dust on it.
I'm kind of glad you brought this up. Well, I mean, here's the thing about, I wore it already this week? Yeah, well, here's the thing.
Or yesterday.
I have hat cars. And if I'm leaving, I just fall into one of my hat cars, and I'll reach back and I'll grab one of the three or four.
You mean
hats
car hats?
Hats in the car.
Yeah.
You said hat cars.
Yeah.
So you have cars for each hat?
You've got car hats.
No, they're hat cars. They're the hats that live in my cars. Hat cars.
Okay.
Or car hats? Yeah. Whatever.
Car hats.
It doesn't matter.
They just they permanently live.
Yeah. They're getting bogged down.
Sometimes
Chris
I have to
is technically right though, which is weird.
But at least he's not boring us.
Having hat cars would be more impressive. If you had hat cars, that would be
coming out of
cars
a bullpen.
For your hat.
I think the only person that might relate to this is Dan. But sometimes when I go to clean out my car, I'll do the count and it's like, well, there was 14 hats in this car today.
I can relate to that. Yeah.
Well, really. Let's go around the room because Billy's had a couple of father dad things because he had a conflict. I don't know what I would call it with frozen hamburgers.
Oh, we're going to get to that.
Oh, boy.
But let's go through the fashion police of, since you guys are judging each other, who comes up least favorably on being most slob?
Okay, hold on. Before we get to that, Dan, you may have caught this, you may have missed this. We did on Mystery Crate a couple weeks ago where Tony assessed everybody's fashion and he described what he would, how he would classify everybody's fashion. And my fashion,
I think it took the biggest L.
Yeah, my fashion, thank you for asking, was very cool in 2004.
My fashion, I believe, was guy you'd hang out with at a bar, what he said to me. Which I was like, I get it.
What was Whittingham's?
Well, Whittingham is always, he presents better than just about anybody, maybe not fashionably, but he is clearly, there is not a day that Whittingham comes in here, and I believe this cannot be said for our group. In fact, I don't know that I can say it for a lot outside of Whittingham. He's always clean. This does not mean
gels his hair. I think that's what you're looking at there.
What
I mean,
right. He's always clean. What is that?
What I'm saying
is, I take showers every single day.
The rest of us are dressed in a way that suggests we might have worn yesterday's clothes and perhaps not showered after.
He gels his hair before he goes to bed.
Yesterday's clothes.
It's
an aesthetic. I'm not saying it's actually so. I'm saying it's how we look.
I don't remember what the classification of witty was, but I would say it was along the lines of member of parliament on vacation.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's
like
perfect.
That. It was
perfect.
Something like that. But yours was like the coolest guy in 2004, though.
Yeah.
Like the coolest guy.
So who took the biggest beating, though?
It was me.
No, it wasn't you. It was
me. But I think Stugatz and I would do very poorly here.
Oh, we would.
Yeah.
You left us out of it?
Let me take a look at you, Stu. Hold on.
Okay.
Let me see.
Stand up.
That shirt looks
give
new,
me a little
though.
Pirouette.
I love when you look at me, Tony.
Yeah.
These dad hats just work on Stu, though.
Yeah. That's where I get my inspiration from for dad hats, is Stu.
It's not the same Grateful Dead hat he's been wearing for 3 months, though. It's a new hat.
No. That one's ratty.
Nice loose fits, Stu, guys.
My zipper's down.
Good for your form.
Yeah, I was about to point that out. Why is your hand down there?
Stu, and I'm playing the result here because I know Stu, but Stu is like lax dad, not lax like relax, like lad. Lacrosse dad, like lax dad who like
also lad.
Exactly. But that's the aesthetic I get. And Dan, let me take a look at you, Dan.
You're just going to say he looks like a writer? I feel like now we're getting
a little bit. He looks like a writer.
Tony, be very careful.
No, but I just can't believe that you guys think people need to be wearing different shoes every day.
That was Tony that did that.
Different shoes.
They're called kicks, too.
You look, okay. You kind of look like an artist, like a painter.
Wow.
And if you look like your brother, family, but it looks like you're an artiste of some sort. You sit high atop.
He's like, I can't say writer. What else can I do?
I think it's just the hat. I think I wear hats with a lot of stupid colors on them, and that gives off. It's skateboarder and fat skateboarder. But I don't understand what you're doing with the sneakers. How many pairs of sneakers do you own, Sugats? That you would, because I was telling them I've probably worn 6 or 7 pairs of sneakers the last 3 years. So I'm coming in all the time with the same shoes.
I own like 5 to 6 pairs of sneakers, but I only wear like 1 or 2. That's it.
That's the thing. I have probably like 20 pairs of sneakers plus, but I only wear like the same 3 or 4.
I have like, I think 5 or 6.
Yeah. Three. Yeah,
and I only wear like 2 of them.
Oh, but he is, Tony's an elitist. He's a
Tony
sneaker.
Tony has a room.
He's a sneaker.
He was at a convention. It was on our social media.
Well, Juju, how many sneakers? Like I've got, Juju has 100. Extraordinary style.
I'd say north of 100 for
so
Juju.
So Juju is thinking of what we're talking about right now. And you're saying what? It can't be surprising to you. Hell, Juju bought Greg Cody a pair of sneakers just because Greg Cody has been wearing only deck shoes for 15 years.
Juju regularly gives away sneakers to people. Not me, but people.
What size are you?
12.
I would give you some, but I'm a 13. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh. I don't like, this is going to sound,
I can do a 12.
I would feel weird about wearing your sneakers.
Why?
I don't know. Something used? About your feet being in there and then my feet being in there. I don't know what's going on with your feet.
They're clean.
I don't know. I don't know.
Do
that.
You try shoes on at the store?
No, my feet typically don't grow. They stopped growing. I know what my size
But different shoes like fit differently.
Sometimes. Yeah,
I'm a 10 and a half sometimes. Sometimes an 11. Even 11 and a half on a good day.
Bill. Wow. You got to try them on. Sometimes some are wide, some are narrow.
Well, I don't buy a lot of shoes because I only wear the same like 3 pairs.
Billy, let's go sneaker shopping, you and I.
I can't hang.
You're, no, you can.
No, we were on a sales call the other day about something that had nothing to do with sneakers, and you immediately started talking about sneakers to the salesperson.
Well, he talked about sneakers with me.
And then it was like, I spent this many hundreds of dollars. I'm like, no, too rich for
it's
my blood.
No, it's a different lifestyle. Juju.
No, thank you.
Being a music snob, it's like you can't compete with these conversations.
I'll stick to my mailboxes. Thank you very much.
Well, I want to get to your frozen hamburgers in a second, but I just want Juju to explain to us. Juju, how often do you cycle through sneakers? Like, if you're wearing a pair today, when will this pair get worn again?
Rarely again, if ever again. Dano,
what and done?
If I take a picture in a pair of shoes, forget about them. You can have them. All of y'all dress like my uncle. Salute to my uncle. But all of y'all dress like him.
Yeah, uncle. Yeah.
All right.
Kentucky rule.
Izzy, I almost said Izzy because Izzy's a big shoe guy. What size shoe do you wear? Because I want those gold ones that you gave Izzy if you've already worn them.
I wear size 12, ladies.
You see? Just like all right. Billy. Just like Billy.
Well, there you go. Yeah, like Juju, if you're wearing shoes once, I mean, feel free. I mean, I could use a little drip.
Oh. I got you.
Don't ever do that again.
Just went down to 2002.
Wow.
Not the down 2 years.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Juju, hey, how's your uncle? Billy.
What?
Oh, my.
Billy, tell me about the frozen hamburger situation.
I thought you were going to say frozen movie. I was like, I could tell you the whole thing.
Can I very quickly interject? Hey, how's your uncle is not an expression.
Hmm. Oh, Mike just made it up.
Wow,
right?
What are the origins of it?
I believe
Mike.
There's a different. So that particular one is Mike, but there's a different expression that includes the phrase or the word uncle. But hey, how's your uncle is not an expression.
Yeah. Urban Dictionary. Wow. Look it up.
Yeah. Look it up. Billy, what's the situation with the frozen hamburgers?
Hamburger prices are very high. I don't know if you're aware of this. I was doing some shopping, grocery shopping, which I also love. By the
prices
way,
prices in general are very high, right? Everything's going up.
Do you guys like grocery shopping? I think we've done this before.
I love it.
Yeah, we don't need to go down this path.
No. Sure, you in charge, huh?
Wow. I mean, my God.
The expression is actually Bob's your uncle.
Bob's your uncle.
Bob. Let's go to Bob.
Bob.
The expression is Bob's your uncle?
And it means, and there it is, or and there you have it, or it's done. Typically, someone says it to conclude a set of simple instructions or when a result is reached.
No.
The meaning is similar to that of the French expression, et voila, or the American, easy as pie or piece of cake.
No, I think Hayes Howell, your uncle, had to do with sodomy. If I remember correctly.
Well, it was a finger. Yeah, it was a finger Well, it was a bicycle seat reaching in.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah. Frozen hamburgers.
Prices, outrageous. So I was going to get some burgers, and I said, you know what? I don't want to pay this much, $15.99 for some Bubba burgers. No, thank you. I even remember when
they are expensive. They are super expensive.
You're eating six of them.
You see? You
yes,
saw it?
There's
yeah.
six
see,
of them.
See, I'm not alone. This week, Bubba burgers are way too expensive. Yep. Six burgers, $15.99. I remember paying $9.99 for Bubba burgers.
See, it's because of coronavirus.
It's inflation.
So, you guys are eating frozen
just,
burgers?
No, but it's not just that. It's our meatpacking plants. Nobody wants to work in them anymore.
Well, why don't you just get ground beef?
Great question. That's what I did. That's exactly what I did. I said, you know what? I much prefer these prices of ground beef right now. So I went and I got the ground beef, put it in a big bowl, put an egg in there, put whatever spices it is my wife told me it is that go in there.
You made meatballs, huh?
That's right. No, yeah. No, not just meatballs. I made a little meatball and then boom, aplatao with the little machine that you use to make burger
Let's
patties.
Go.
And All right. then I wrapped it in some saran wrap, put them in the fridge. Seven. I made seven of them, not six, seven of them. For less than the $15.99 that they were selling six for. And I even asked the butcher, which I had never spoken to before. It was a big mistake because the butcher was kind of looking at me and he's like, hey, can I help you? And I'm like, no, I'm okay. I'm just looking.
Tom Thibodeau?
Yeah. So then I was
Rico
there.
Gudis.
He kept asking me, like, are you sure you don't need any help? I'm like, well, do you have Angus? And I don't know anything about meat, but I felt like I need to ask him something. He wants
It's a good
to
question to disguise.
Well, because I knew that the other burgers said that they were Angus
Those
beef.
Are the black cards.
I got to be honest with you. I have no idea what an Angus beef
is. Do you have Angus?
Yeah,
is
a type
great
of cow.
Question. It's a great, like, but it's a great bluff by you. You didn't know what you were talking about, but you wanted to connect with the butcher.
Well, because I knew the other one said Angus. And I said, well, if I'm going to go all out and I'm going to try to upstage and put Bubba Burger out of business, so I'm going to have to need some Angus beef here, right? So I went and I said, do you have Angus burger or Angus beef? And it looked completely different than what I was looking for. So he's like, well, we have over here Angus. And I was like, well, wrong question, because now he's going to tell me about the history of Angus meat or whatever. So I ended up just getting regular beef, but I got one that said like less fat or something, because I'm like, I got to feel a little healthy about it.
Anyway, you got lean.
Long story short, I made seven burgers out of it instead of the six.
You are learning with your daddom, you are learning how to do things for yourself more price efficient, and the fulfilling rewards of I'm not going to be gouged by this meat processing and the problems this country is having because our meat workers are getting sick at a disproportionate rate. I'm going to make my own burgers.
Hold on a second. Let me make this point very clear, and I want it to be known where I stand on this. I am not against meat workers or meat processing workers, if that's what you're implying. I just thought I could save a couple bucks here, and if I take down Bubba Burger, I take them down. And it was delish. I made some yesterday on the grill. The only thing that I can't figure out, though, is that they shrink. Yeah, what?
You want to make it for Sunday for our NFC Championship?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good idea. Yes.
I don't know.
Potluck?
I don't know. Because where am I going to get a grill up here? It's going to be a whole thing. By the time I cook it,
we'll put it on the roof.
Cold.
We'll put it on the fourth floor. We'll have Billy's grilling situation where you can make burgers for us because we buy you a bunch of meat for everybody.
That's a bit wordy. I mean,
Billy Grill.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot shorter.
I was going to bring back does Dan give off artists to you guys, only to make a Vincent Van Gogh joke.
Very good. Very good. Very good.
Salvador Dali.
Let's do that. Let's do it. Somebody was doing wrestling the other day and they called me Way Mysterio. I think we should do this. You should do artists and let the audience have at that
one. I am in with Vincent Van Gogh. That is my best one. I mean, feel free. It's the only artist I know.
Salvador Dali is pretty good.
Pablo Picasso.
Andy Warhol.
Jackson Pollops.
That's underrated. Jackson Pollops.
Jackson Pollops is good.
There's got to be a Michelangelo. There's a, who's Edvard Munch? That could just stay the same.
Fright.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Libertard.
If I'm at the house with them and they're all rooting, I could just be like, yeah, rah, rah, rah. Go Yankees.
Stugats.
Do you know how unsettling it would be if I attended a live sporting event and someone behind me was just going, rah, 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 Browns, rah, Heat, rah, rah, rah.
This is the Don Libertard Show with the Stugats.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
How much time do we have with you, Edge?
How much time you need, Dan? You're the man.
All right. Well, I like this. I've been trying to talk to you for a long time, so.
Now's the perfect time, man. Anytime you need me, just call me personally, man.
Why is now the perfect time, and what's your number?
Well, everything's the same. Dan has my information.
You're not going to give it to me. I wouldn't either.
No, I'm going to come on anytime Dan wants me. I'll make sure you have all the contact information, and I'll pull up in the studio in person.
Well, let's get you over here, because if you had asked me, I don't know, 25 years ago, if you'd asked me, will Edger and James be in the Hall of Fame? I would have said he's got a shot. But if you had asked me 25 years ago, will Edger and James write a book? I would have said, I don't think he's going to have any interest in that whatsoever, because he didn't. If there was something about fame, I don't know, that you didn't trust or that you didn't want so much. You wanted the things that football gave you, but not necessarily some of this stuff. So why write a book, Edge?
Well, you know, as you travel and as you go, as you travel this journey, you start looking back and you start to see all the people that you can inspire. I see so many guys that remind me of myself, and you don't get a chance to speak to them personally. You don't get a chance to see them physically. And the best way to kind of give off some insight or kind of spread the word is through a book. So I think it's best and I think it's appropriate.
And you want people to know some things that perhaps you didn't know to ask about when you were young, or did you see an absence? Do you want to impart some wisdoms to people that you wish you had?
But I think it's both. I think it's one of those things where you see guys, you see guys going through things. A lot of times you say, dang, I went through the same thing, or they're handling it the wrong way. And I say, man, you know what? Maybe if they take this approach, or maybe they take that approach that I've taken, and to inspire a lot of guys, because a lot of guys, you know, where we're coming from, nobody knows a personal author. Nobody knows anybody that actually wrote a book. And to actually be one that actually put a book out, I think that's just another layer to all the different things that I've accomplished, and also can inspire others to kind of do the same.
You were reluctant, I felt like, to tell your story. I remember that I sort of had to pry it out of you, and it's not like you were talking to a bunch of media members, right? You were trying to do the bare minimum. You wanted to stay in the shadows once upon a time.
Yeah, man, because everything was new to me. I didn't have somebody to kind of show me the way. So everything with me was trial and error. So I had to learn and figure things out, use my instincts. And the best thing to do is stay in my comfort zone at that time. You know, as you get a little older, you can say, okay, yeah, you know, maybe I could have said this or said it, but I never wanted to look back on some things and say, dang, I took the wrong approach there.
Are there some things that you look back in your playing days, Edge, and which wish you'd spoken up on, or maybe used the platform and not been hesitant or distrustful around the lights? The adult Edger and James would like to go back and say some things differently in public.
Nah, I think I handled it the right way, because, you know, I know what I was there for. I was there to play ball. You know, I was there to play sports, and that's what I enjoy, and that's what I love doing. And I never got away from the foundation of what I'm here for.
People don't understand what you come from, Edge. I've read the quotes where you say, I was an adult in middle school. I was a man in middle school.
Yeah, I don't think people really understand what certain people go through. And I think there's a lot of kids that's actually going through those things right now, where they're kind of thrust into a situation that they probably didn't want to be in, or they didn't really know they had to be in. And when you're thrown in those situations, you got to make them work. And that's what me, I was always making things work, but kind of going with a whole lot of trial and error and figuring it out as I go.
Can you explain to us what the transition was like for you? Because let's go back and tell the whole story autobiographically, right? You get to the University of Miami, and I believe I have this right, Edge. I'm doing it from memory. But at the time, you are uncommonly muscular, but were not a weightlifter, right? Largely in high school, you got that kind of size working on watermelon trucks, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Immokalee, and the thing to do for when you're young and you want to try to make some money, you go to the watermelon field and you try to, and my grandfather was a contractor, so he let me come out there at an early age, and I was probably the only child out there, and you get a chance to work and earn your own money, you know, and for me, getting to the University of Miami, you know, when I got there, I saw guys, if they played well, or they said certain things to people would give them money, and I was like, damn, this is pretty cool, because for me, I had to earn everything that I had. And those things right there started standing out. But it's like I was being prepared to be a man at an earlier age than everybody else.
Can you tell the audience, because you love Immokalee, and Immokalee is a hard, it is a hard, hard place. Can you explain to people why it is you love Immokalee the way that you do?
You know, Immokalee, it's just a special place because it's a melting pot. But it's a melting pot of people that really don't have. And when you start looking at how hard the people work and how much energy people put into having these small things, you get a greater appreciation for things. And then once you leave Immokalee, you know, you take that same appreciation for things and you look at the rest of the world and you say, man, this is pretty easy. When I got to Miami, I'm like, this is pretty easy. I got a chance to do all these wonderful things and be in these nice situations. And you don't even really have to work that hard for them.
What do you remember about the transition that wasn't easy?
I don't look at nothing as hard. You know, I don't look at nothing as hard. I never looked at anything as hard, you know, because, you know, I've always had a great family support. You know, Immokalee is on an hour away or so. So I've always had family and friends around. And football, you know, the University of Miami was, you know, the tight-knit group that we've always had. You know, that made everything so much easier.
Edge, when and how did you fall in love with football?
Football is the thing to do. And with me, you know, football, it became natural for me. And plus, it was easy for me. So, you know, it's something that everybody else is doing. And you get a chance to go out there and play amongst people that are 2-3 years older than you and be successful. I think that right there, those are the signs that say, hey, you know what, I got a chance to be really good at this. And football was something that gave me a chance to be myself. You go out there, you be a warrior, you got to be a gladiator, and you do all these things to, I guess, kind of get to the other side, so to speak, when you're running the football. And that right there is always a joy in doing that, being able to outwill somebody.
Stugatz, you should know that Edge was saying that football was easy for him upon getting into the pros, that he was surprised that it was easy, that he would play after.
The speed didn't change?
Just that after games on Sunday, carrying 25 and 30 times, you'd go back to your house and play pickup basketball, right? Because you weren't even having trouble with NFL Sundays, correct?
Yeah, I, you know, at first, you know, I guess because you have it in your mind that you're going to play this big time sport and it's going to be so tough. But then when you get there, you realize like it's the same game you've been playing since you were a child. You know, you've done all the proper things to make sure that you're equipped and you're ready. And then when you get there, you know, it's the same thing. So for us, you know, I went and played football with all my friends were at the house. You know, I was young, 21, 22. Had everybody at the house, and you know, we just go play the game, and soon as the game over, we'll get back to the real game, and that's the basketball game at the house, you know, and that was the way we kind of treated it. We had fun with that.
Basketball game at the house after NFL Sundays, because I remember asking you all the time, like, why doesn't your body hurt? Why aren't you beat up? That probably later in life, right? Later in your professional career, there had to be some pain that came with it that made you less likely to do that, right? The Arizona days, you're not playing also basketball at the end of Sundays, are you?
When, you know, as you get older, Father Time catches up with you. And for me, it was, you know, your body starts telling you when, hey, you're not capable of doing these things. And the recovery takes a little bit longer once you get older. You know, when you're young, you don't even realize you actually had a game. You know, it didn't even feel like you played a game.
Do I have this wrong, or was there not a time when your friends were betting about whether or not you would show up for the Hall of Fame speech? Because like that wasn't that wasn't really your thing.
It wasn't that I would show up. It was how short it would be. You know, they had a bet on would it be 1 minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes? Would it be the shortest in the history of the NFL? So that was the going thing. And then the other thing was they thought that it was going to be a time they finally get to see Edge cry. And obviously, you know, that's not happening.
Yes, this is not.
You crushed the speech, though, Edge. You really did.
Thank
you. I appreciate it.
You not only crushed the speech, though, Edge. I could not have imagined, right? Because I don't know. You would have no reason to remember this, but I do remember at the University of Miami, your off-campus apartment, going to see you, and you were sort of reticent about being a public talker. You didn't really. It wasn't interesting to you to see you go from that to 25 years later, have command of an audience and confidence with everything you were saying. It was a marvel to see how much education you'd gotten. And I'm talking about all of it. I'm not just talking about school, Edge. I'm talking about all of it. Just a confidence to speak in front of people is not something that I had seen a quarter century earlier from you.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, amongst my peers, you know, and, you know, I don't have a problem with talking when I'm in my comfort zone, but I always want to make sure that I have my information. I love to read. I love to study. I like to make sure I have everything together. And over the years, I've just been collecting all that information and knowledge and putting myself in a situation to where I'm not getting out there making a fool of myself or getting out there just blurting things out. You know, if I say something, I want it to be effective and I want it to be factual, you know, so that it can actually carry on. You know, it's not somewhere it's like Edge is out here just talking. So I wanted to make sure whenever I do anything like that, I want to make sure it's done the right way.
Why was it so important for you to be authentic, Edge? Because I do remember when we did a magazine story together that you really wanted people to know unfiltered truth. You were going to cut through all the bullshit.
Well, I think that's what I think the world's ready for that. And I think I've always been on that because of the fact that it only makes sense. You know, it's hard to put on to be something else. And then all of a sudden you go in front of a camera, you have to be something else. That's a conflict of interest, you know, especially when you have people that are in your everyday life. They don't know if you're telling the truth or you're just saying things. And for me, you know, I relate to so many normal people. You know, a lot of times people look at us as celebrities and they put us on this pedestal, they put us in this kind of category when we're all human. And I think being yourself and being natural and being real, I think it's more appreciated. And it also inspires more to say, hey, you know what? This guy, you know, he's just like us. And he was able to accomplish all these things, but doing it the right way.
If I asked you the most fun you ever had 1 year of playing football, any time along the path, what would be the year that you would point to?
Oh, man, I had so many fun years playing football, but the fun has had to be at the University of Miami. You know, the University of Miami, when football was, it was just fun. You're having fun, you're playing the game, and after the game, you know, you don't have money, you don't have all those things, all you have is each other. You know, that's when it really was fun, those years at the University of Miami. You know, I think when you get to the pros, it really turns into business. You know, it's a true business, and the benefits of the pros are the things that you're able to attain and the access you have to things. But you're talking about pure fun. It's at the University of Miami when you don't have money, you don't have all these things. All you have is each other. You have your wit. You have who you are as a person. That's what it really was about then.
Edgerrin James with us here. His new book, From Gold Teeth to Gold Jacket, My Life in Football and Business, is available February 8th. As a Hall of Famer, I've been dying to ask this question. David Baker, is he scary? Like, that man is a scary man. Is he not?
Do you know him by name? Do you know him by name? Because I don't know if David Baker.
I just call him Baker. I just call him Baker. But
he's enormous.
Now, the thing about it, when you see him, you know, it's like, okay, it's like the football gods are here. You know, that's how it is. Like, he shows up because only time you see him is when it's about that gold jacket. It's about Hall of Fame talk. And that's, I think they did a great job of keeping him in that little box right there so that when you see him, you know it's real. And I think anybody that plays football or anybody that really understands the game and want to go to the highest of the high, you'll know when Baker shows up, it's like, yeah, you've arrived.
Where is the gold jacket right now? Where is it?
It's in the box. I always keep it in the box that they send it to me in, you know, and I'll pull it out whenever I need to or whenever we have an event or they say you bring the jacket out. But it's one of those things that you'll barely see it. But when you do see it, you know, it's a moment.
Are you proud of anything in football above all else? Is there anything that gives you a great amount of pride where you're like, yeah, I'm pretty impressed with myself there. I'm happy I was able to do blank.
My children. I'm very proud of that, you know, and like right now I have 4 kids in college right now as we speak. They're all in college at the same time. So, you know, you have 4 kids that's in college. I don't even have a college degree and I have children with college degrees. So, you know, that's one thing I'm very proud of and trying to make sure that I'm the best dad out there. That's one thing I'm most proud of, way more proud of that than anything I've ever accomplished in football.
Can you tell the people who do not know Edrin about getting to the University of Miami from where it is that you were from in Immokalee? You were talking about things that you did not have, but it's more than that, right? I mean, you were weightlifting, going back to Immokalee, and you're having crackheads. You're paying them. This is as a child. You were like 9, 8 years old. you're amusing yourself because you're surrounded by a lot of temptations and a lot of bad things, and you grow up fast. I don't think the audience knows just how much you overcame to statistically get to where you are. The odds were all against you.
Yeah, and that's why they need to go get the book. You know, those things are in the book because it's one of those things where you could have easily went left. You know, when you look at this stuff, it's like you could have made the wrong turn at any point in time, but for some reason, something's shining on you. Somebody, you know, has their hand on you. I don't know if it's your mom's prayer, your grandma's prayer, but somebody has their hand on you because for some reason, you end up making the right decision at the right time. And that's like the story of my life. You know, I don't know why I was put in this situation because I grew up in the same situation as a lot of my peers. I know a lot of people that was athletic. I know a lot of people that had the same things that I've had. Some of them had more. But for me, you know, it was always just at that right moment, you know, making the right decision. You know, why did I make that decision? You never know. But it ended up working out the right way.
Do you have a memorable I went at it with Peyton Manning story? Because he can be a baby sometimes. He loses his temper. And I don't imagine he's doing a whole lot of that to you.
Nah, we had a mutual respect for each other. And the way we played the game and the way we understood the game was, you know, when it's time to run the ball, you run the ball. When it's time to pass the ball, you pass the ball. And I think that's why we got along so well, because we understood each other. You know, if it was something that I needed and I say, hey, Peyton, you know, I have these incentives in my contract and I need to get these yards because that money means something to me, you know, and he'll check in with me through the game. So when you got a person
that's I want to hear the rest of this story because you told the story. It was Jim Mora, I think, right? It was Jim Mora who said he wanted you to kneel on the ball at the end of the game, and you're like, bleep that. I'm not kneeling on the ball. I've got incentives for touchdowns. I need a touchdown here. How does that one fly with Peyton? He's happy? He likes the rebellion?
That's why our relationship is the way it is, because, you know, and nobody's come between me and my money. It means something to me. You know, it really means a lot to me, especially where I'm coming from. You know, if I get from here to 20 yards down there, that's the difference between making a half a million or $1 million. You better make sure I get it, you know, because, you know, that's a lifetime right there. Yeah, some people work their whole lives and don't make $1 million. All I got to do is get 20 more yards. You better help me get these 20 yards, you know. So we're always on the same page, and that's the thing about it. But we always did everything within the game, you know, because you can go within the game and do it the right way and still accomplish what you want to accomplish. And that was the beauty of everybody being on the same page. It wasn't a thing where at the end of the game you say, hey, man, you know, I just needed 20 more yards and I didn't get it, but I didn't speak up. No, I speak up. I'm going to let you know ahead of time.
Go tell us the story. So you're coming into the huddle and you're like, Peyton, I need 35.
It doesn't start in the huddle. It starts Monday
during the week.
It starts on Monday. Hey, I need this amount of catches or yards. And this we got, I just want you to know, because you have the ability to change the play at any time.
And, you know, not more, I just want you to know, right? Yeah,
this your boy back here. Yeah. Like, you know, because and you know, for me, it's like, and that's one thing. I've always had his back, and situations like that let me know, man, you know what? He got my back too. So it always worked out.
Did he ever let you down on a bonus? Like, I'm trying to get you the bonus.
Did this happen multiple times? How many times did this happen?
Well, you know, I had incentives in my contract throughout the year. I mean, you know, throughout the first so many years. So during those periods of time, you know, you want to make sure that, hey, I need to get these incentives. I know we're going to be sitting out the last game of the season. So we need to make sure let's get all this stuff out the way so it's a non-issue. You know, and so we were able to accomplish those things without a problem. Everybody was happy.
Let's talk about money.
He hit every one of them.
Let's talk about money for a second, though, because I've seen on Instagram you're sitting on giant stacks of cash. I don't know how much money that is, but it's giant stacks of cash.
Mm-hmm. Those are ones, man. Those were ones. That's nothing compared to what they got out in this world. You know, that's baby money compared to the world, the money these guys putting out there. So that's nothing, but it's. No, it's fun. It's entertaining. I'm in the nightlife business. So, you know, it's all part of marketing.
What can you tell us about that? I don't know, because you are public about that, but I don't imagine many people are asking you about that. And I imagine it's a private thing as well. But I've never known Edgerrin James to be anything but honest. Like, he ain't hiding anything. So how did you get into that business? And what was the decision making like? Because you are a prudent businessman. You know how to make money with your money.
Well, I think it's, you know, over the years, when you become a ball player and you start looking at the things that we're into, the things you're into are the things that you're into. You're not going to really get away from it. And for me, I've always liked the nightlife, you know, and if it's something that you enjoy, you start inquiring about it. So you start learning about it. And throughout my career, I was always doing real estate. So I had a chance to combine real estate and being in the nightlife business, you know, all in one. So it was like the perfect storm for me. So I started, you know, buying real estate and own the real estate. You know, there's a club. And with the club, you know, you kind of get the best of both worlds. And for me, that's, you know, that's kind of where I like to sit. I like to sit where I'm working, but I'm also having fun.
But you wouldn't drink at all, correct? If I have this right, when guys, during your playing days, you would not have drinks. When you're talking about nightclub, you're talking about adult entertainment. You're not talking about drinking and partying.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter what club you go to. Like, when it came to me and football, you know, football was my life. You know, I didn't care to drink that. I was not interested in that. You know, anything that works against what you're trying to accomplish and what you're trying to do in life, there's no need to even consider it. So drinking was never part of the equation.
When you say proud of your kids, Edge, this is a big one for you, right? Them all being in college. Can you explain to me why it is that part of it? You being able to provide a life that, you know, how hard it was for you to get to college. You know what you had to overcome in order to get to college. I don't know if Edgerrin James spoils his kids or not, but my guess is they didn't have to endure what he had to endure in order to get to college.
Nah, I mean, they shouldn't have to either, because, you know, I'm in a position where I can position them to actually go to college. And you're talking about some people never get a chance to go to college. And right now, today, I have four kids in college, on college campus. You know, I have my one daughter at North Carolina A&T. You know, my other daughter at Clark Atlanta. Another one, my son, he just enrolled in Howard. He's an early enrollee. And then my other daughter, she's finishing law school in May. And coming from my situation, my background, that's unheard of. I don't know if you're looking at Guinness Book of World Records, do you have anybody else that has four kids in college at the same time, coming from where I'm coming from? You're not going to find that. You know?
Edge, you retired in 2009. If I told you in 2009 that 12 years later, Tom Brady would be coming off a Super Bowl victory and would be the likely MVP, you would have said what to me?
Man, well, Brady plays quarterback, you know, so you play quarterback, you have a chance to play a long time. Son, but man, you're happy to see people that you actually play with, but it actually makes you feel older than you actually are. You know, it's like dang, I was actually playing with Brady, you know, but I've been retired for over 10 years and Brady's still going, you know, so no, but that's something that's amazing accomplishment. And you're rarely going to see something like that happen, because those things right there, that's tough to accomplish. But that goes back to taking care of your body, being in tune with the game, and actually loving the game. You got to love the game to be playing for 20 years. It's just like Frank Gore. I was like, man, how long is he going to keep going? You know, it's like, it's tough to get out there mentally, because, you know, the locker room is where you socialize. And I know Frank started turning into a parent in the locker room. He's like, man, I'm like, he's leaving home as a parent and coming to the locker room as a parent, because it's like, dang, these kids weren't even born and I was out here playing ball. You know, it's like those things right there. I had to take my hat off to them to be able to stay in there that long and to be able to stay into it, because it's a tough business and you spend a lot of time in that locker room.
Fill in some of the blanks here, just rapid fire. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions here to chronicle your career. The toughest teammate Edgerrin James ever had was blank.
Anquan Boldin. He's tough. Anquan Boldin is one of the toughest people you're going to meet.
The guy at the University of Miami who I most said that guy might be as good as I am at this was blank.
Ed Reed he could play both sides. He could play both sides of the ball.
The best teammate I've ever had is blank.
It's a bunch of good teammates. You know, it all depends on the situation. So I'm not gonna blame. I would say probably Rob Mack. That was like one of my close friends. You know, the teammate he played on the other side of the ball. So at the University of Miami, I would have to say Rob Mack.
But Peyton got you your bonuses, man. I mean,
I thought we were talking about the younger years.
He wants to reminisce about the Miami years, the fun years, yeah, the best.
Fun years, not the business years.
The best.
On the business years, P Money always took good care of me. So I always called him P Money too.
Yeah. He doesn't look like a P Money, but he was the P Money if he's calling the plays at the line. How much did he make you? Let's go ahead just off the. I don't know if you know exactly, but in the neighborhood, the amount of money that Peyton Manning made me by doing the correct thing on audibles to get me my incentives was blank.
Nah, I can't say made me. I say because everybody made money that had incentives, so you're like kind of controlling. So I can't say, okay, yeah, he made this, but at the end of the year, he would make sure that those bonuses are secured.
The guy on the other side of the ball, nobody keeps Edgerrin James up at night, but if he was going to lose a wink of sleep, a linebacker that might make him lose a wink of sleep was blank, or defensive lineman.
Still blank.
It's still blank.
That's so great.
Nobody. Yeah. So it's not anybody. There's not.
Still blank. I love that.
Never. It's still blank. Never. Is that real, or is it because you will not give anyone that begrudging respect, even many years after your retirement?
I mean, it was nobody that. It's like, man, I want to see him. It's like, man, it's like if you're the best, I want to see. I remember, like, we playing in the game, and you know, like, you coming from the University of Miami, you always hear about Marvin Jones. You know, remember Marvin Jones? And I'm like, we're playing against the Jets. I'm like, as soon as I get an opportunity, I'm running full speed in front of him to Marvin Jones. Like, I want to feel it. Like, I want to see it. I want to know what the best of the best is. But that's always been my approach. So, like, I haven't seen nobody that says, man, you know, I don't want to go up against this person or whatever. I want to see all that. I want all that action right there, because that's what's going to separate you from the rest of everybody else. Like, I want to see the biggest, baddest, so that I can see where I'm at and see what I need to do to get my game up.
I mean, not even Ray. Ray?
Man, we all play at the U, man. So we out there, man. Like, it's like, man, it's just like you're playing against your brother and all that. So you don't even put them in the category, because you don't even look at it like that, you know? So when you play, you don't even right. Look at them that way. I don't look at them as the enemy. You look at it like we just doing our job. And at the end of the play, we might be talking about something back home or something. You know, it's like it's a different game when you're playing against your boys.
Ricky Williams said Roy Williams on tape, he broke into the open field and went looking for him because Roy Williams was a bully as a safety, went looking for him. You're telling me that Marvin Jones, before the Marvin Jones game, you break into into the open field and you're looking for Marvin Jones because you want him to feel you?
Yeah. Nah, I just wanted that action. You know, it's like Marvin Jones, you like, Marvin Jones is like the legend, you know. You're saying, okay, somebody that did it the right way and that was a beast playing football. You're like, man, yeah, I want that action. I want to go up against them because, you know, that's, and they respect it too. The older guys always respect a younger guy that come in and go at him and play hard. Like, we used to play against Brian Cox and we used to play against all those guys that were from the old school, like Bruce Smith. They respected the guy that come in and don't fear you and really want to play the game because it's a gladiator sport and we all embrace each other. So those were situations that I was like, man, you know, I always wanted the action against everybody who was the best.
He wanted all that smoke then.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.